Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes. On today's radio program, we have on the telephone with us Justin Taylor, who's the assistant winemaker and full-time on-site winemaker at Burnt Shirt Vineyards in Hendersonville, North Carolina. For those of you who don't know about Burnt Shirt Vineyards, they won a couple of gold medals at the Asheville Food and Wine Festival this year. We'll be talking about that just shortly. The Burnt Shirt Vineyard is owned by Lemignon and Sandra Oates, who came out of the textile business down in Hendersonville. So, Justin, let's hear about the story of the vineyard and your experience with winemaking.
Good morning, Chuck, and definitely happy to have an opportunity to tell you a little bit about what exactly we are doing down here at Burnt Shirt Vineyards. Burnt Shirt Vineyards is currently a 100% estate-grown and produced winery located here in Henderson County. Our estate vineyard and main location of our tasting room is right off Sugarloaf Road, and we have 19 acres under vine at that main location. And in addition to that, we have an additional 8 acres planted on top of our namesake, Burnt Shirt Mountain. And Burnt Shirt Mountain is located about 17 to 20 miles east of us on the other side of the Continental Divide. It's a vineyard that sits at 3,400 feet above sea level, and it is home to almost every varietal that we produce here at the estate, with the exception of a few. And at that elevation, we just, you know, we can only ripen up certain types of grapes, so that's what we're trying to focus on at that location.
What kind of grapes are you currently growing on the 19 acres at your present location?
So at Sugarloaf, we have 13 varietals, and I will march through them here as far as the blocks in the vineyard go. We've got a combination of traditional wine grapes or vinifera. You're looking at Chardonnay, Cabernet Franc, Merlot, Malbec, Viognier, Riesling, Gruner Veltliner, which is our signature white varietal. So originally an Austrian varietal, does really well for us. In addition to that, Petit Manseng, Cab Sauv, and Petit Verdot. And so that rounds out the portfolio as far as our vinifera goes. In addition to that, we do have a few French-American hybrids and hybrid varietals, including Chamberson, Vidal Blanc, Traminette, and that really rounds out the wine style that we're able to produce from all that mix of grapes here at the estate.
Well, I noticed in the results of the Asheville Wine and Food Festival this year that you came up with 2 gold medals. In fact, one was a double gold with your Burnt Shirt Vineyards Estate White. I guess that was a Vidal Blanc-based wine. And the other one was the O'Sellers Reserve Cabernet Franc, which won a gold medal. So talk to us a little bit about those particular wines and how they were made and what wonderful things you did to them to make them so good.
Absolutely. So the styles, starting off with the Estate White, it is a Vidal Blanc, and the varietal itself is very hardy for this area, and it produces a very large cluster, gives off very good volume when regulated, and with that comes this really nice soft floral, sort of tropical flavor. And so for that particular wine, we had that fermented and aged 100% in stainless steel, so that wine stayed nice and crisp and really tries to drive the freshness of that particular varietal on the palate and as far as aromatics go. And so that was packaged this past spring, so we had cellared that for almost a year. And the other one that we're very happy to get a gold medal for was our Reserve Cab Franc. And Cabernet Franc for us has just the perfect ripening period for this region. It definitely takes you know, some good weather and everything to be on your side. But as with all things, when you can get it right, it has this kind of soft, delicate, little bit of a rosy characteristic with more of fresh fruit. We're not, you know, we're not getting overly jammy flavors in our wines. So you're looking at something that's more of a little light strawberry, cherry characteristic. And we did cellar that for 12 months. That was aged in a combination of previously filled and new French and American oak. So having the ability to blend all those different flavors across a spectrum of different barrel types was something that was really exciting to work with, and to watch the progression of that same lot between those different barrels is what I think ultimately brought all the spectrum of flavors and aromas into that final wine.
We're just really happy that your folks were able to get that together and make a gold out of it.
Absolutely, and it's always very, very nice to hear the opportunity of someone having tasted that downrange from us working on it, because, you know, there's so many things that go into getting a wine ready, getting it into bottle, and then, you know, you don't hear some feedback for a while. So there's definitely some nervousness that surrounds putting a new label out there like that. So that was very exciting and just fantastic news for us to have from the Asheville Food and Wine Festival. We're, you know, very, very happy to participate in that, and, you know, excited to see the production of wine in the region now pretty well represented at a wine and food festival in a town that certainly enjoys its light bites and types of drinks. So it's very exciting stuff.
Well, we're just tickled to have you participate in it, and hope to look forward to some more good wines next year. Let me talk about some of the things going on in a vineyard for the moment. For the radio audience, many people don't understand the complexities of having a vineyard on site and having another one that's a little bit farther away. This means that you've got to have somebody doing some coordination between the ripeness of the grapes, or the time to be picking, and the time to be making wine. How do you manage that at Burntshirt?
At Burntshirt Vineyards, you would be able to essentially find a team that consists of myself on site, our vineyard manager, who has done a fantastic job not only tending to the grapes themselves, but, you know, being able to keep an eye and an open line of communication with myself. And in addition to that, we work with a consultant winemaker. His name is Tom Payette, and he is based out of Virginia. So I work with him on strategizing, say, from the 30,000-foot view, and then it is my task to go in and execute down at the lower level and really make sure that everything is marching along between the three of us. And so it's a fantastic opportunity, because we essentially have the ability to sit down and we're bringing in fruit, we're getting our wines through harvest, and then by the time December rolls around, we all take the opportunity to sit down and review exactly what went on and what happened for the vintage. And so we spend some time together, usually a few days in the fall, and then again in the spring before we proceed to any bottlings. And between the three of us, we really have our hands and, on the pulse of what's going on between the vineyard and the winery. And as far as the cellar work goes, it's something that I think can be deceiving. On our production level, we are rated at, or what I would measure us at, about a 5,000 case annual production facility, which is the average. We've got enough work in the cellar and in prep for bottling year in and year out that I am able to be here full time and work, diligently through the winter, trying to get all of our wines buttoned up from that current vintage. And then once January rolls around, we're looking at getting all of our blending parts and pieces, whether from the 15 vintage or prior vintages that we have in the cellar, all of those prepped for our bottling that would be coming up in the spring. And so there's certainly a lot of work that goes on in that respect, in the same sense that during those months, those cooler months, that's when our vineyard manager is going through and making decisions about pruning, trellising, basically clearing and cleaning up everything that was left behind from the prior year's growth. And he and I work together on a few things. Occasionally we'll sit down and review things like bud count. We will do some traditional research on, some of our clippings. We'll go through and cut buds on certain vines to see how the cold and how the winter has affected viable buds going into the next year. And so it's something where we all keep a very tight-knit roll of information, and it helps make our decisions easier going into the crunch time of harvest. So it's constantly evolving.
Well, Justin, I know for the benefit of our radio audience, many of them, of course, don't understand some of the technical difficulties involved in doing some things. But on a very simple front, for example, most listeners probably don't realize that there are actually three different buds in grapes. They have primary, secondary, and tertiary buds, and you sort of assess the winter damage by taking a look at those. And that's what you were referring to earlier when you were taking a look at the buds, I assume.
That is correct. We are basically trying to judge whether or not we're going to have green growth with fruit on it or just green growth, because each one of those buds carries either the ability to produce fruit or the ability to just produce vegetative growth.
Have you had any luck at assessing which varieties do better on secondary or even tertiary growth?
Absolutely. Especially with vinifera, you might be able to squeak out a little bit of a higher percentage on your secondary and possibly tertiary if you're looking at varietals like Trimnet, Vidal, and Chamberson. Those hybrid varietals we have seen can still produce a pretty solid, almost full crop off of some of those other buds. But for the most part, it does cut down very quickly when you lose that primary bud on certain varietals. We have seen the greatest impact on our reds, which may or may not be surprising. It's one of those things that if the vine's ripening its fruit late in the season, that means it's not paying attention to going into dormancy as early as the white varietals. And so you can almost look at it in the sense that the winter chilling sneaks up on them much faster than it does on the white. And so we see a decrease in their primaries well above what you would normally see for the white varietals.
Now, I noticed you said earlier that your vineyard at Burntshirt Mountain was at 3,700 feet. What's the elevation of your Sugarloaf location?
The mountain is 3,400. 37, I'd be scared to see what happens at 3,700, but 3,400 is the mountain, and the estate is at 2,100 feet, and they perform so different from that little bit of change in elevation.
That's an astounding observation that most people have no appreciation for. Talk to me just a little bit about what you see on that difference.
The best way to sit down and kind of line up your apples to apples in this situation is, for example, on grapes like the Gruner, the Vidal, the Riesling, the grapes that we have planted at both sites, you can watch their ripeness stagger by 2, if not almost 3 weeks apart. And so by that, what I mean is that our state vineyard, we can have sugar levels, acid levels, pH, and almost a softening to the point of not quite breaking down, but they are, very, very ripe fruit. At one point we will pick those, move forward with processing that, and then we are watching the ripeness of that other fruit on the mountain, even if it's the same varietal, and you will not see it reach that point for 2 to 3 weeks after you've already picked the fruit on the estate. And so it gives us a unique opportunity because we can balance out different flavors and we can balance out different ripeness characteristics. In particular, that higher elevation where it stays cooler, the fruit tends to hold on to more acidity. So you have lower pH and more of a crispness associated with those wines. And in addition to that, 2 to 3 weeks of different weather. So you never know what could happen over that time. That could be good, that could be bad. And so you really get the opportunity to see how that site will really separate itself in just the sheer time of ripening that fruit.
Well, Justin, it's been interesting chatting with you so far. We're going to take a break at this point in time, and we'll be back. Hang on, folks. We'll be back just in a second. Today's program is being brought to you by Arnie's Awesome Argyle Socks, made with local hair sheep wool grown in the mountains of Madison County. Arnie's socks are woven by human toes using finger loom techniques that he taught his 7 children. Every evening during supper, their toes are busy under the dinner table weaving the colorful squares that make up the unique diamond-shaped pattern down the sides of Arnie's Awesome Argyle Socks. Pink, green, and purple are the standard colors. The most popular is black, white, and chartreuse. The wool is made with a special artificial core of baling twine twisted to give it the strength and endurance of a great work sock for the farmers of Madison County. Arnie's Awesome Argyle Socks. Guaranteed not to rip, ravel, run up your leg, or stretch. Made in the good old USA here in Marshall, North Carolina. Buy some today at Zuma's Coffee Retail Counter. And now back to our regular program. Welcome back, folks. We've been talking on the telephone with Justin Taylor, who's the full-time on-site winemaker at Burnt Shirt Vineyard in Hendersonville, North Carolina. Just before the break, Justin, we were talking about some of the things that go on in the vineyard and the winery there. I want to come back and have the audience understand a little bit more about how you folks measure ripeness in your grapes. This is always a big question for people who are trying to raise grapes.
Absolutely, and I think for anybody who is first getting involved with growing grapes, one of the more deceiving aspects is, say, when are they ripe and when are they ready to pick? And there are not only sensory aspects that you've got to use, but also chemical aspects. And what you are looking at in the fruit is visually, you'll start to notice that in our whites, they start to become translucent. You can almost see the seeds inside of the berry. And then from there, also the reds, they go through the verasion process where the berries go from being green to taking on color and becoming red. And that's just the beginning. From there, you start looking at chemistry. And our chemistry right now is largely focused on the Brix or sugar content. So we are measuring what our soluble solvents are. And by that, we're just referring to the fact that you're measuring sugar level, as the sugar is your fuel for the production of alcohol. In addition to that, the pH. So the pH is going to be somewhere between 3 and 4 pH, hopefully not too close to 4 when you're looking to harvest your fruit. And in addition to that, there is something referred to as TA, or titratable acidity, and that is a grams per volume measurement, or grams per liter is the best way to look at it, measurement of the acidity contained in your grapes. And the use of all three of those things allows you to really focus from several different angles on saying when something is ripe, because visually and by taste, those things can be deceiving perceptions of when to pick your fruit. Whereas if you can quantify it, you can say what exactly the volume is that you're coming in at on your sugar, on your acid. You can have an idea of the trajectory of that wine once you're actually processing the fruit. So for us, we are looking at a Brix. Ideally, if you can get into the 21 to 23 degrees Brix range, that's fantastic. pH certainly north of 3, but somewhere lower than, say, a 3.5, 3.6. That's always good. And your titratable acidity is what's going to help give you that perception of freshness or some crisp characteristic. And for us, we largely see that somewhere between 6 to 9 grams per liter of acid. And it varies by grape. Everything is constantly in motion. So that's the other thing to kind of keep in mind is you're looking at a moving target, and you've got to make your best decision based on that chemistry in association with the actual structure of the fruit. Because once you get to that level of ripeness, berries actually start softening up. They get to a point where you might go out there and, you know, the berries aren't necessarily falling off of the cluster, but skin begins to soften up. And once that skin begins to soften up to a certain degree, you can only go so far before you look at essentially the fruit falling off the vine.
What is the range that you find typically on, say, your Vidal Blanc on bricks?
Vidal Blanc, we just picked our Mountain Vidal, and it came in at 23 degrees bricks, and the pH was a 3.49, and our TA was right in the 7 grams per liter range.
Well, isn't a 23 bricks sort of high for white?
23 bricks can be higher for white if you are looking at the final fermentation alcohol by volume. You could probably see that as around 13% ABV, maybe just north of 13%. Some of the other whites that we're able to work with that are a little bit lower in alcohol, something like our Gruner Veltliner, that's a little bit more modest as far as the ABV goes. And our Viognier is actually one that we can let ripen up very, very well. And so from that, you get the Viognier itself is not something we produce as like a single varietal blending tool, but that comes out very big, very full, and has a little bit more of a higher alcohol by volume.
Do your reds come in higher than 23?
We have one of our reds in particular that we were able to hang last year for a good while came in, the Petit Verdot came in at 24 bricks, which was really special. That's a very rather high alcohol wine. After all is said and done, you're looking at north of 14%. But for the most part, we are able to, given the right weather, we are able to get them into that 22 to 23 degrees bricks range, no problem. It's vintage based. You know, there's so much that happens year in and year out that can either allow you to take advantage of the proper ripening, and then there's other years where you could be dealt a bad hand as far as weather goes. And so it's definitely much more of what I personally feel is an old world approach as far as wine production goes.
Well, I know with that many different varieties of wines, there's going to be occasions where you might want to do some blending. How does blending take place at Burnt Shirt, Justin?
Our blending is a fantastic opportunity where we get to sit down. It is an occasion where owners, Lemuel and Sandra Oates, our vineyard manager, myself, and our consultant, we set up at the blending table, and we have the ability to go through. And what we're doing is we're essentially looking at, we sit down with wine styles in mind. So, for example, sitting down to blend something like our Altitude 3400, we know the varietals that we would like to use in it, and that's about it. We are faithful and very flexible in the sense that there isn't a recipe. And so for a blend like Altitude 3400, we're looking at Cab Franc, Merlot, and Chamberson, but in different volumes depending on what those separate lots we're able to bring for that particular year. And then if you look all the way over to the other end of the spectrum to something like our Meritage, which is a new label for us. That's something that we have just gone after in the past year. And Meritage is it's seen in many, many facets in the United States, but for us, the goal was to participate with Meritage Alliance, which is based out of California. They are branded to recognize wineries and vineyards that produce a wine that is using the traditional Bordeaux grapes. And for us, that was something that we were really excited to have the opportunity to take advantage of, and just wanted to be a participant in that particular wine style. And so making a Meritage for us in our first vintage consisted of parts Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet Franc. In addition to that, Petit Verdot was the third highest volume, and then a varietal that I mentioned earlier that is not seen too much around here, which is Malbec. I think that Malbec has some potential. You've got to look after it the best you can, because it tends to ripen up a little earlier than the other reds. And so, you know, you're picking that one way before the other grapes, but that Malbec only makes one or two barrels for us year in and year out. And so that is the only wine that we're going to be putting the Malbec into. So that first vintage was four of the five Bordeaux varietals. And then in our 2014 Meritage, which has been blended and is now resting in the cellar, we are looking at having all five. So we were able to incorporate Merlot into the mix and also having our Malbec and our Petit Verdot, Cab Sauv and Cab Franc in there as well. So it's something that you're given the tools, and if you do everything that you can during harvest and through the winter to make sure that you have essentially the colors on the palette, you should be able to paint the picture that you'd like from them, and that you're not dealt a hand year in and year out. Let's just take it as it comes. And so for us, that's something that we're very happy to have the opportunity to do.
Well, it sounds like we've got some wonderful wines to taste in the future there, Justin. For folks who've been listening in, how can they contact you and tasting room hours? How can we reach out to you?
Absolutely. So we are located right off of Sugarloaf Road in Hendersonville. The best place to find out some information about us online is at berkshirevineyards.com. And you can visit us 7 days a week. We are open Sunday through Thursday from 12 to 6 p.m. And on Friday and Saturday, we are open from 12 to 7. This year, we have added a fantastic food truck called the Vintner's Table. And so we are also providing some light bites on Fridays and Saturdays. And if you have an opportunity to come out, have a glass of wine, and hopefully a little bite to eat. And in addition to that, we have upcoming events. We are about to host our Mountain Harvest Party, which is an event where we are taking customers for a day to go do a picnic on top of the mountain at our mountain vineyard. So that's a very unique, probably one of the biggest perks that we have as far as our vineyard goes. In addition to that, if you were to look into possibly doing any kind of event hosting, we do have the Summit Event Center, which can hold anywhere from 150 to 200 folks. We host things like anniversaries, retirement parties, company meetings, weddings, rehearsal dinners, just an all-around great space to come hang out and sit on our patio overlooking the estate. And not to mention, it's at this time of year with the fall colors coming about, it's just a beautiful time to be out and about.
Well, Justin, we certainly appreciate your taking time today to spend with us on the radio program, and hopefully our listeners will be looking forward to tasting some of your wonderful products coming out of that winery down there. Again, we've been talking with Justin Taylor, the on-site winemaker for Burnt Shirt Vineyard in Hendersonville, North Carolina. Thank you, Justin. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Chuck. It's been a real pleasure.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!